Hi and welcome to another episode of the Two Time Labs podcast. I'm Francis Wade and today we have a very interesting guest who actually led a very, very important study, one of the very few studies that chronicled the results of an intervention in a high school, a prep school, an intervention that was intended to produce a particular result in the area of time management with ninth graders in a particular high school in the Northeast. So our guest today is Jeremy Burrough. Jeremy, welcome to Two Time Labs podcast.
Thanks, Francis.
Jeremy, just for the sake of our listeners' knowledge, I'll refer them to the paper. The paper is called Examining the Efficacy of a Time Management Intervention for High School Students. And it was led mostly by the ETS, the Educational Testing Services, of which you were a staff member, and you're now at the ACT, the folks who do the exam testing for high school students, sort of as they enter college. Am I getting all of that right?
Yep, that's right. That's the testing company. So I was at ETS for about 5.5 years, and I recently moved to ACT, and I've been there for about 4 months now.
Fantastic. And I didn't know the ETS did a lot of research, but when I went to one of the websites, I saw that there's actually a lot of work being done. And in this particular case, it was done in the area of time management. And it was 4 years ago that it was done, Jeremy?
Yeah, we did that work about 4 years ago, and it just took a little while to get published. But we did it over the course of about a year and a half or so.
Fabulous. So maybe you can take us through sort of the steps, the genesis of it. Did ETS have the idea, or did the prep school have the idea? Where did it come from, and what was the process that you went through?
The group that I worked with at ETS had a previous relationship with this high school, so they had done some other projects with them, and in brainstorming, it was just before I got there, in brainstorming with the headmaster of the school, he noted that, you know, it's a very elite school that's almost very impossible to get into. But he noted that even though they have all these skills and they're the top of their, you know, basically the 99th percentile of their standardized testing scores and everything, that he still thought they had a deficit in their time management skills, and that was one thing that they really needed some help on. And so that was kind of the idea for kind of the genesis for the project. And then when I got to ETS, they put me on there on that project to design the first time management intervention for them and run kind of a quasi-experimental study. We ended up running two of them to try to figure out, you know, if this thing was working at all. So we did it with their ninth grade students with the thought that if we could intervene at the ninth grade, then that would obviously help them throughout their high school career.
And is that the freshman year, their first year at this particular school?
Yeah, it was the first year there.
Okay, and given the fact that they're testing in, I guess they take some exams to get in. These aren't your average high school.
Yeah, it's a very selective private school, and so they had to test in and be accepted to get into the school to begin with.
Mm. And then is it safe to assume that given that they are already highly accomplished, that they would come in with above average time management skills?
Yeah, you would think that they should because there are...
you think...
So that's what you would think, because they are used to kind of high-pressure academic environment.
Right.
So they should probably have better than average time management skills, but what a lot of the research in cognitive and non-cognitive skills tell us, non-cognitive being things like personality and attitudes and stuff, they're not always highly correlated. So obviously we probably all know some people who are extremely intelligent but just can't seem to get their act together, just can't manage their time and get things done. That's kind of you can find a lot of those types of people in these really highly selective schools. So even though they seem like, you know, they have everything it takes to, really excel in school and at work, there are certain things about them, you know, about their personality or about some kind of study skill or self-regulation skill that they're missing.
Wow. What is that for the general population then?
Sorry, what was that?
What does that tell us about the general population?
In the general...
of high school students.
Oh, in the general population of...
high school students.
Yeah. You're asking what's the percentage of people that are kind of like that kind of are extremely intelligent, but are kind of...
No, the opposite. If the highly accomplished, you found that there were several gaps in their time management skills, what do you think you'd find if you did this study in the general population, the average high school?
Oh, I think what I thought when I did the study, the research was that our manipulation would have been stronger in the general population, just because of the nature of the school. You know, it's a boarding school, it's highly structured, and so a lot of the time management is done for them. I think if you're in a less structured environment, if we could have had the chance to do it in, you know, a more urban, you know, public school, I think we would have found stronger effects.
Interesting. And by manipulation, just for our listeners and also for me, you mean the experiment that you performed?
Yes. Yeah, the experiment, the actual intervention, yeah, which I referred to as manipulation, yeah.
Right. So you would have expected a bigger delta then in the general, if you had done it at an average high school.
Yeah, that would be my prediction, yeah, just because of them coming from a less structured environment. So, you know, imposing or teaching them to structure their time would be more useful than for a student who's coming from a place where their time is already structured for them.
Right, less regimented.
Yes.
And also, given that it was a boarding school, you sort of have everything programmed so nobody gets into any trouble.
Exactly.
And so they're not left to climb on a school bus and go home and have weekends free to do what they want,
yeah.
Essentially.
You know? Yeah.
Interesting. I wonder if you could explain for all of us, you know, the layperson's version of the two experiments that you performed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of a multi-step process. So for each of the two experiments, we had an intervention group. They're the ones that actually went through the time management intervention. And then we had a control group of students who were the same age and, you know, in many of the same classes as these students, but did not receive the intervention, so that we can compare our results to them. And so it was a multi-week study. The first week, they took an assessment of their time management skills, a self-reported assessment. So we asked them to rate their own time management skills on several dimensions, including things like their ability to set goals, their ability to organize their time and tasks, and their ability to kind of use tools, things like calendars and things, to organize their time and manage their time. After that, we compared their results to a sample of over 1,000 students from across the country who had taken the same assessment, and we categorized them then as people who were low in time management, average, or high in time management, and we then gave them feedback in the class saying, you know, here's where you are, here's where you stand on time management, and at your level, here's some things that you can work on to improve your time management. So we gave them some suggestions, which were generated by panels of experts in time management.
And so, were they given the feedback in a panel situation, or was it given one-on-one from a counselor?
It was in a classroom situation, but from the counselor, so they were free to ask questions of the counselor, and they were the feedback was provided to them on, you know, we gave them little packets with their scores and then with the associated feedback, so they could read through it and keep it and ask the counselor questions about it.
Oh, okay.
And then after that, in the first study, there was three homework weeks. We called it homework. That was designed to improve their time management. The first one was designed to help them more accurately set goals and to have a better sense of how long it would take to achieve a goal. And I'm a social psychologist, so I tried to bring some social psychology into these interventions. And so what it was designed to do is to fight something called the planning fallacy.
Yeah.
Which you probably are well aware of, is the idea that we tend to underestimate the amount of time it takes to complete things. And one of the reasons why we do that is because we tend to aggregate all the things together that we have to do into one big task, rather than thinking about every single little task that you need to do to complete something. And one way to fight that then is to actually have people list out every single thing they need to do to complete a task or to complete a goal.
And so, no, reality slips in.
Yeah, exactly. So what we did then was we had them list three goals. Do you have a school goal and a life goal? We had them list, and then one was a social goal, no, an extracurricular goal, I think it was. And we had to list something that they wanted to be done, let's say, for their school goal. So it might be, earn an A in math this year or something. And then what we had them do is to list as many things as they could that it would take to earn an A in math. And so that's kind of getting them to unpack the task. So they're going to have to, instead of just thinking of it in a broad way, I'm going to earn an A this year. First, they need to think, well, to earn an A, I need to bring my books home, or, bring my books to my bedroom at night and read them. And I need to study for 2 hours a night. And I need to, read all my assigned readings, different things like that. And then what we had them do is circle the three most important things that it would take. So of that list of things that they needed to do to complete that goal, they needed to circle the three most important things that they should do. And then we had them list those three things on a separate document that we gave them. And then we had them list what they had to do to complete each of those goals, and then what they had to do to complete each of those goals. I'm not sure if this is exactly making sense, but...
No, it's a work breakdown.
Okay, yeah.
Breaking down the goals into smaller.
Breaking down the goals into several smaller pieces. And then finally we had them list the exact day when they would start doing that first thing. So if one of the goals was, if I want to get an A in math class, I need to get a good grade on the first test, then I would say, what do I need to get a good grade in the first test? I need to read my book. And then what do you need to do to read your book? You need to actually take your book into your bedroom and read it. And then we would actually have them write down the exact day that they were going to be taking their book home to start reading their homework. And we had them do that for several goals.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't pick that up from reading the research that's the kind of training that was done. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it was a kind of a detailed process of getting one very broad goal and having them break it down to as many components as they could, and then breaking those components further down until they get to an action point where you actually have to do something on a particular day. And if you designate a particular time when you want to do something, then when that time comes, you're much more likely to do it than if you just give yourself some general sense of, I'm going to do this at some point in the future. The more exact you are with planning and action, the more likely you're actually to do it. So that was the first week's homework assignment. The second week, we had people do a very detailed version of something called the day reconstruction method, which is it was something originally designed by Nobel Prize winner named Daniel Kahneman, who developed with a bunch of his colleagues this method to look at how people use their time and also how you use your time is related to your happiness levels. And we made a much more detailed version of this where it's not a very complicated idea. It's where students on an hour-by-hour basis when they were awake had to actually list what they were doing. So we gave them a list of possible activities, which pretty much covered everything that ninth grade students tend to do in a day. We had to check what they were doing, who they were doing it with, and how they were feeling at the time. And so they had to do that for about 12 or 14 hours, however long they were generally awake during the day for one day. And then at the end, they had to actually reflect on their day and add up, how many hours did you spend, for example, watching TV? How many hours did you spend exercising? How many hours did you spend doing homework? And then...
That kind of awareness builder.
Yeah, exactly. And then we also had them reflect on how they felt while they were doing it too. Just, oftentimes we have these theories that, I'm happiest when I'm watching TV and unhappy when I'm doing homework, but that's not always necessarily the case. But so we wanted them to reflect a little bit also on how they felt when they were doing kind of engaging and non-engaging types of activities. So that one was basically the second week. It's the logic behind it is kind of similar to what we know from some research in health, is that probably the best way to lose weight is to keep track of all of the calories that you ingest in a day. So write down everything that you do. In the same way, we thought, you know, maybe one of the better ways to get people to manage their time is to actually just keep track of everything they do in a day, so that they can really decompose their day in a useful manner.
Right.
And then the third week was a very simple exercise where we have them use a calendar and give them just some instructions on how to use a calendar and how to use a planner just to organize their time. So that was the first study. The second study was very similar, except for there's a couple of small changes in the design, and then there's a couple of additions to the intervention. So this first addition is a little bit complicated. It's where we had them write down we had them think in a very detailed way so we had them tell us what one of their goals was and elaborate on why they wanted to accomplish that goal.
Tapping into their purpose.
Yeah, exactly. So it's an intervention, once again, from social psychology designed to get people to, so it's highly related to purpose. It's gets them to think of things in what's called a high level construal, or basically interpreting the world in a very high level way. And so there's kind of a range of kind of two ways that you can think about your activities as you go throughout life, in a high level way, which is highly decontextualized and abstract and meaningful. It's related to things like superordinate goals, you know, really important life goals, or you can think about things in a more subordinate or low level way, where you think about things in a very contextualized and detailed and subordinate goal kind of a way. So one example might be, you know, if I'm a student and I'm reading a book, if I ask you, why are you reading that book? People are likely to say, if they're thinking in a high level way, I'm reading this book because I want to become a better person. You know, I want to become more educated. Whereas if they're thinking of it in a low level way, you might say, well, what do you do when you read a book? And they might say, well, I turn pages and I read words. And so the simple exercise of asking somebody, why are you doing something versus what do you do when you're doing it, can get people to change the way that they think about these activities, which then has implications for their judgments about the activities. And interestingly, some research has shown that it has implications for self-control. And so people who are thinking about things in a very high level, more abstract way, actually in laboratory research, it's been shown that they can control their impulses more. And so our logic for having this little intervention, adding this little intervention, is that if we can get students to think about their goals in this high level way by asking them why, in a very detailed way, why do you want to have this goal, and get them to elaborate on why they have this goal, then hopefully they'll be able to keep their mind on, you know, the long-term implications of the goal and have more self-control when other forces come around to try to derail them from that goal.
Then was that good time management comes in part from being focused on your goals and the reason why you're pursuing them in the first place.
Exactly. It's almost, yeah, I mean, that's almost the definition of time management if you think about it. If you're frequently distracted from your goals and you're doing things that are not goal related, that's almost pretty much by definition poor time management.
Right. Assuming it's not some kind of habit that is just running on automatic that you're not even aware of.
Right. Yep, exactly.
Good sense. Good.
And then finally, the final homework that we added for the last one was, for the second study was, we actually just gave them an extra quiz about time management halfway through the intervention.
Yeah.
And that was added because there's some research in the learning literature that, and in the memory literature, that if you, that simply answering questions, it's called the testing effect, simply answering questions about something you're trying to learn is actually more useful than studying. So, you know, if you, and, you know, a lot of good students, you know, in high school and college kind of know this implicitly, that if you want to do well on a test, what you should do is answer test questions. So get a lot of practice questions and answer them, right? Rather than, you know, reading through your book and reading through your notes, you should actually just answer questions over and over again. And those types of people tend to do better on the tests. And so we tried to do that to help them build their knowledge of time management.
Again, the hypothesis there is that greater knowledge of the principles or the precepts would then translate into behavior.
Yep, that's what we were hoping, yes.
Okay.
So those are all the kind of components of the intervention of the two studies.
Interesting. And then, so my sense in reading your paper, and I'll just repeat the name for those who might want to look it up, because it is available on the internet, examining the efficacy of a time management intervention for high school students. I believe it's available at the ETS website. I don't have the link here at the moment. My sense in reading the research was almost a little bit of, oh man, in terms of the results. Am I understanding it right? Is that you were looking for a sort of a big effect, and you didn't quite get a huge effect?
Yes.
They're subtle, but I think they're actually very, very interesting and very important.
Yeah, we got some suggestive, I would call them kind of suggestive effects, in that if, unfortunately, our funding for this research ran out, or else we would have been able to further tweak the intervention in the study to try to capitalize on some of the things we think we learned. But we got some suggestive findings. There were some findings that, so we hypothesized that students, if they had received this intervention, their stress levels should go down, because obviously if you're better at managing your time, then you should have less stressors bothering you, just because, you know, you have things under control. And that's, we did find some suggestive evidence that students who had taken the time management intervention, throughout the semester, their stress levels had gotten lower as compared to the control groups. So we have some evidence for that. In the second study, we have some suggestive evidence that advisors thought that students who had taken the time management intervention actually were better time managers at the end of the semester than students who had not taken that intervention. And those advisors who had done the rating also were blind to the condition, meaning that they didn't know that the students they were rating, they didn't know if they had taken the intervention or if they had not.
Fabulous. So it was a clear indication that there was a difference, a delta.
Yeah, there was a difference. It didn't quite reach statistical significance for the full sample, but if we looked at this to students who had rated themselves the lowest in time management at the beginning of the semester, those students, for just that group of students, there was a significant difference.
In terms of time management skills?
Yeah.
Or in terms of?
In terms of this, the advisor's impressions of their time management skills. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. We the interesting thing about the time management skill thing was, what for students' self-ratings for both studies, we did not find they did not rate themselves any higher at the end of the study on time management than the control group did. You know, they didn't report any more improvement or decline than the control group did. And in fact, there was a little bit of a suggestion that they may have even rated themselves lower as compared to the control group, which was an interesting finding.
Yeah, no, I find almost the same thing in my training, where at the beginning of my classes, at the beginning of a day of training, you know, I train people who work in corporations mostly, that they come in and they have a notion in their minds of, you know, sort of how they compare themselves against other people, which is really all they have before they do any kind of evaluation. And compared to the average Joe on the street, I think people who come into my classes think that they're pretty good. By the end of the day, however, they've done a full evaluation. And in order to do the evaluation, what I have to do is actually teach them 7 fundamentals, which gives them way more information than they ever had before. They use that information to evaluate their own skills. So at the end of the day, they have not just knowledge, but they have this evaluation. But my impression is that, you know, they leave a little bit sobered, a little bit humble, because A, they really didn't know all of this, and they didn't know how they stacked up against the world class in these 7 skills. And there's no way they could do that kind of evaluation going into the course, because they don't know what to evaluate. So isn't there a whole sort of school of thought that says that you can't do a good evaluation until you have the knowledge? And when you do the knowledge, you realize, I'm not quite as good as I thought I was. But it's actually a good thing.
Yep. Yeah, there's actually from social psychology a small line of research on exactly this effect. It's called the unskilled and unaware effect. My advisor was actually, his name was Justin Kruger, who's now at New York University. He published the original article on this with a guy named David Dunning from Cornell. I also have one paper on this related to this topic. But
as a connection between your study and his study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really interesting too.
Yeah. Yep. So the basic idea is pretty much exactly how you explained it, is that people tend to, so there's this thing called the above average effect, where people on average tend to think they're above average, which is impossible. But then,
the Lake Wobegon effect, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
Where all the kids are above average.
Yep. Lake Wobegon effect, yep. So my advisor and David Dunning were wondering, well, so we know there's this above average effect, but who are the people that are most likely, you know, who are the ones that most exaggerate their standing in the world? And what they found is that the people who are the most unskilled are the ones who are most likely to most exaggerate their skill.
The most people that think they're the best in all the
world. The worst think that they're much better than they really are compared to the rest.
Really bad news, you know?
Yeah.
Really, really bad news.
And so they hypothesized when they did this original research that the reason why this happens is because they don't possess the metacognitive skill necessary to be able to properly evaluate themselves. So they, in order to evaluate yourself on a skill, you actually need to have some of that skill so you know what it takes to have that skill. So there's a lot of skills in that sentence, but hopefully that made sense. So one thing they did was they looked at your ability to tell jokes, for example. And the least funny people rated themselves as pretty funny, even though they were the least funny people in the whole study. And then they taught them some jokes. You know, if they you could teach them some jokes and teach them how to be funny, then those people, well, then after that they knew, you know, they weren't so funny anymore. So in the same way, this is what we think. We don't really have a lot of evidence for this besides our hypotheses, but this is what we think is probably happening to people in things like time management training. The people who are the worst time managers probably think they're a lot better than they really are, and then when you train them in their time management and then you ask them, you know, well, are you a good time manager? They might say no, even though they've just had a class in time management. It's just because they know much more about themselves than they did before your class. Yeah, exactly.
Matter of fact, those people are really, really bad. They don't even take time management courses because they say, I don't have a problem in time management.
Yeah, that's a real...
I have a problem with email, or everyone else just wants too much from me, or my boss is unreasonable, or my wife wants to spend too much time doing nothing.
It's an interesting point about these kind of things, these self-improvement courses and stuff. It's usually the people who don't need them are the ones who take them because they realize the importance of them. So it's kind of a weird dilemma.
Yeah, I feel as if in my training, I spend about an hour and a half sort of trying to convince people that it's a good thing to be here.
Yeah. It's
like, don't run out the door at the earliest opportunity, or turn on your smartphone and start, or your iPad or your laptop and start doing work. It's a good thing that you're here. This is really good.
Yeah, it's a really good idea. I actually taught negotiations at Columbia Business School for a couple of years before I went to ETS, and I spent like the first half of the first class always doing that exactly what you did, you know, trying to get them to understand why it's important to be in that class, because a lot of them came into the class already thinking they were good negotiators without really having the skill to know that, you know, there's a lot that they don't know.
Their yardstick is just way off.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're saying that, I couldn't find any research that directly supported the notion that this applies to time management skills, but it sounds like you're saying that the results seem to indicate that it does, that the better time managers rate themselves worse because they know better, and those who are weaker rate themselves stronger. So there's no direct data, but there's a subtle hint in what you found that points in that direction.
Yeah, there's no direct test of that with time management, but the findings are consistent with the previous research, and there's a growing body of research showing that this kind of thing happens in many domains, in many areas of life.
And is it a problem in general of having people evaluate themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's endemic to humans for several reasons. Even if you're not one of the unskilled people, even if you are pretty highly skilled or, you know, average or slightly above average, we all tend to rate ourselves, for the most part, as better than what we really are. And so having, you know, even if you have some skill, even if you're not one of the most unskilled people, having a little dose of reality every now and then would be really helpful for us.
Yeah, where I'm from, we call it the small island effect.
Yeah.
Only 2.7 million Jamaicans are on the island, and you know, we think we're all that until we go into the larger world and realize there's a lot of good people out there.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy.
And you can't see, the fact that we're on an island means that, you know, it's not easy to be, you don't get regular exposure to people, for example, in the next state.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in Florida, you can drive to Georgia,
yeah,
or Alabama, or Jamaica, you have to jump on a plane,
yeah,
which means that you have to spend a lot of money. And but if there's a barrier to escape, it sort of maintains small line of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
There are many people who I have in my classes who insist that they're really good in time management before they do their evaluation. And just as you predicted, they leave sort of realizing that that's not the case when they compare themselves using a sort of an objective standard.
Yeah, it's totally consistent with a lot of that research from social psychology.
So the net effect then was that you had slighter effects than you hoped to find in terms of your intervention. If we measure success in terms of them evaluating their own skills. But tell me something, do you wish that there was, like for example, you mentioned that there, if you had more funding and you could have gone in for a third, a fourth, or a fifth study, you know, if you could have continued, what would you have done in addition to sort of build on the first two studies?
Mm-hmm. There's a few things that I wanted to do. Without getting too technical, one thing I definitely would have liked to do is follow these students in the future. So we only had them for, you know, 2 or 3 months between pre-test and post-test. And there's some evidence that small interventions like these build over time, and they show their effects. They show larger effects over time in theory, a student who learns to be a good time manager will see positive results from that time management. Like they'll get better grades, for example. And then once they get better grades, their time management practices will be reinforced. So they'll realize, you know, all these things that I did to manage my time were useful. And so they'll continue to do that. And then as a result, once again, they'll get really good grades. And that kind of thing kind of builds on itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability to track these students over time, who knows, you know, the students that took our intervention now might be, you know, extremely much more successful than they might have otherwise been if they hadn't taken our intervention, but we just don't know that because we didn't have the ability to track them beyond the course of the study. That's one thing I definitely would have liked to do.
Right.
Another thing I would have liked to do is really focused a lot on just the setting goals aspect of the study. I think we had some really interesting interventions there that just focused more on the setting goals aspect of time management rather than all the other aspects, like, you know, how to use a planner and things like that. And I think being able to set your goal and properly plan for how to achieve your goal is very important. And if I had my way of doing things and unlimited funding, I would have really dug down deep into that aspect of the study.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Because now they're about 19 years old, I guess. 4 years ago, they were 15 at the time.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So they're probably freshmen in college.
Freshmen in college kind of age, so... What they're using in terms of what they got from the interventions and how the, what kind of goals they set for themselves. Now, it would be really interesting to sort of compare and get traced back to the original intervention. No?
Yeah, you never know. I mean, it's probably unlikely that, that this little month-long intervention had a big change on their life, but you never know. There could be a couple of students that really actually learned something that they're using now.
Do you think it's realistic any at all to expect a delta or a change in behavior, even if even self-evaluated after 2 or 3 months? Do you think that's just too short?
Yeah, I think it is a little short. Yeah, it is a little short, but then, you know, we did find some kind of interesting findings, especially I thought the one with stress where the students... who were taking the time management intervention felt less stress after the intervention. I thought that was interesting, even after a short period of time. So,
how do you explain the drop in stress? It's an emotional result, yes.
Yeah.
A self-reported result, yes. How do you explain it? Sort of why the drop in stress? Do you think?
Well, our prediction was that what I thought the reason why I added the stress variable to begin with was that my idea was that, well, we want to ask them something that we think should be related to time management that isn't specifically asking about their time management, specifically because of this, you know, unskilled and unaware thing, where the reporting your stress levels isn't really a skill. It's just tell me how you feel, you know, tell me how you've been feeling. So I think that's less susceptible to that effect. And then also we thought that one obvious implication of time management is to be able to better manage your stress levels. So if time management means you're more in control of your time, then that means obviously you're more in control of your life, and thus, you know, I think if you feel more in more control, then you should feel less stress. And so that was kind of our logic for including that variable.
So it's a self-efficacy sort of source, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's related to that.
Do you think, the thought I had, which is why I asked the question, was sort of, do you think it's related to more knowledge, sort of more understanding? It's a different possibility.
It's a good point. Knowledge or understanding?
I always feel less stressed when I understand why I do things, or
yeah,
or even if you give me some hope that my understanding will one day lead to better something.
Mm-hmm.
I feel better already. Yeah. No, nothing has happened.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think I'm just making this up. I don't have any research evidence for this, but I think my thought about that is I think you're right. I think it gives you an idea of a way to like take perspective and kind of step outside of your body for a little while and look at yourself in a different way if you have some knowledge, rather than, you know, being mired and stuck in the moment and just feeling stressed out and not having really any attribution or any way to explain it. So I think you're right.
Who knows, you know, I'm speculating too. But tell me something, did you let the students know their rating at any point, their ranking against the other 1,000 who had participated in prior studies?
Yeah, that part was a little ambiguous for the students. So we told them that their time management skill is either low, medium, or high.
Right.
We told them that how we came up with that. So I guess we just kind of took it on faith that they wouldn't ask that question, and then they never really did. So we didn't tell them it was like you're low compared to, you know, a sample of other students in the country. We just told them, you know, you your time management skill of like, for example, setting your goals is a little bit low, and here's some things you can do to improve.
Right. Right. I wonder if the information had an effect on their experience, the information on how they compared to others in prior studies would have had an effect on their experience.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's something we never explored, but it would, if we would have had more chance to continue this research, it would have been an interesting question to explore.
Ah, we need to get you some more money. That's all we need. Some more time. Yeah. Hopefully there's a listener with a very deep set of pockets tuning into our podcast. Because this kind of research, I get these kind of questions all the time. You know, what are you doing for kids? And I don't have kids.
Mm-hmm.
So my natural interest isn't in that direction. My interest is in adults. And I wish, you know, I found your paper. I said, why are there 10 more papers like this? Why am I having to fight so hard to find just basic information on the different time management makes in the time management intervention makes in the life of a high school student? Everyone wants the answer to that question, but there's more research. So why is it? Why are we sort of struggling around here for funding and for you know, for proper programs? And why is there no faculty of time management in any school I've ever heard of? Why?
I think I think it's just because they have. So we did ours in a private school, and private schools have so much more flexibility to institute, you know, experimental types of things with their students and, you know, new kinds of things. And so you have to, I was lucky that ETS was connected with this school and had a previous relationship with them. So we already had an in, but it would be extremely difficult to do things like this in a public school just because their hands are so tied with other things they have to do and accountability to different types of people. It's just, it's hard to do real experimental and innovative things in the schools unless you have a special situation like I did. I think that's probably what it is. I mean, you can go to things like after school programs, which there has been some research, not specifically in time management, but related issues in kind of after school programs. But that's typically about the extent to which you can do this kind of thing.
Interesting, interesting. And I guess the public funding might not make its way to a private, an experiment or a study done in a private school.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like crossing a boundary.
Yeah.
I have one more question for you related, a couple more, but one related to the content. And this one has to do with a sort of a dilemma that I guess what brought me to your paper in the very first place. The notion that children, kids, discover the notion of time when they're about 8 or 9, and they start to create commitments for the future when they're around 11 or 12, and you're getting them at around age 15, which means that somewhere between 11 and 15, they've already constructed something. So you're dealing with ninth graders, you're taking a look at what they currently do. Where do you think their skills, their time management skills came from, given that they already were doing some time management behaviors? What's your sense of their origin?
That's a tricky one. I think, once again, without having done a lot of research on this, it's probably somewhat related to the self-regulation and self-control types of impulses that we develop when we're very young. So, you know, about the
marshmallow
test, exactly what I was thinking, that the very famous study by Walter Mischel from Columbia. I think it's probably related to that kind of a skill that develops when we're very young, but then it becomes multifaceted and more developed when we get older. But the idea, you know, time, managing your time, this is kind of what I was talking about before with some of our intervention, managing your time, setting your goals. It requires, if you're going to achieve a goal, it requires some self-control and a way of shielding your goals from other temptations that come along.
Yeah.
And so, for example, so for these students, you know, they could choose either, you could either have one marshmallow now or you could have two later.
Right.
Well, if your goal is to have two, you need to resist the temptation for a certain period of time of eating that one. And I feel like time management may spring from that type of a process of, you know, at some point, and those kids in the marshmallow test were very young, at some point you need to learn to resist temptations and have some kind of self-control in order to achieve a longer-term goal. And I feel like time management is just kind of a more complex aspect of that, where they develop actual time management. Middle school is probably a good guess about when that kind of marshmallow test kind of skill develops into time management. Middle school is probably a good guess because a lot of educators would tell you is, you know, if you're going to intervene on a student, middle school is the time to get him. That's when they're really developing a lot of these types of skills.
That kind of makes sense. It seems to tie in with a couple of things. A couple of studies I've seen, maybe three or four, around disadvantaged students or students from disadvantaged backgrounds, in that they tend to do separate studies. I think I remember reading they tend to do worse on the marshmallow test. And I saw a study that compared their time management skills and a separate study, and they have weaker time management skills. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that would be pretty consistent, I think, with what I was at least trying to say. I think that makes a lot of sense to me.
We just need to get some more funding. Are you doing any time management research right now, or was this it? And you moved on to other things?
I did have another project with middle school students at ETS where we assessed their time management using a similar type of assessment, and then we related it to important outcomes like grades and teacher ratings and things like that, and it predicted, obviously, as you would think, their time management skills was a strong predictor of their grades and how good of a student their teachers thought they were. Otherwise, though, I've never done anything else that was actually trying to intervene on time management, and hopefully I can get back to that in the future sometime, but that was this particular paper was my only chance at actually doing that.
Wow. Well, was the other study actually published?
It's still ongoing. It's a very big ongoing study it's up to about 60 private schools now where we're assessing, they're still doing it without me, but assessing time management and several other what are called non-cognitive or personal skills.
No kidding. Okay. Well, we look forward to seeing that when it comes out. It'll come from the ETS then, I guess.
Yep, that one will probably come out of ETS. Yep.
Fantastic. And if there is a you know, someone in our listening audience who has deep pockets, who sees the value of research and wants to get you back in the game, how can they get a hold of you, Jeremy?
I guess the best might be just to use my Gmail account. It's jeremy.burrus1, so it's B-U-R-R-U-S and the number 1 at gmail.com.
Fantastic. And so Jeremy Burrus, formerly of ETS, now of ACT, thank you so much for spending time with us here on 2TAM. It's been a fascinating discussion. Thanks for doing all that hard work to put such an important topic on the map for us, and bringing all of your knowledge and your experience to bear. It feels like the beginning, and I wish we could talk about the next steps in a concrete way, but thanks for putting that work.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Great, fabulous. And stay tuned, there's more here coming up on the 2TAM Labs podcast. Keep listening.
Hi, and a big thank you to Jeremy Burrus for appearing on our show today. I wanted to give you a quick update on what's happening with my book, Perfect Time-Based Productivity, A Professional Approach. Taking a bit longer than I expected, and here's why. I originally thought that the book would essentially just replicate what I do in the classroom. Give lessons, give tips, and give a bunch of exercises, and at the end of the book, a listener or a reader rather, would end up with, if they followed the instructions, a plan for improving their time-based productivity, habits, practices, and rituals. That was the original thought. It still accomplishes that goal, but in order to give it some more legs and have it be more than just, here's what I do in my classrooms, I've had to go to do a great deal of academic research. Sorry, I actually haven't done it myself. I've actually read a lot of academic research. So I think I've read maybe a couple hundred papers at this point in areas such as psychology, industrial engineering, operations research, philosophy, management, particular process management, adult learning, and which is known as andragogy, and child psychology, a bunch of different areas. And the reason I've had to go way deeper than I thought originally is that this book is turning out to be more than just a replica of what I do in the classroom. Instead, what I've tried to do is to give readers a solid scientific background, especially in areas that are fairly new to me, like brain science, for example, is one that I'm pulling on heavily, so that they can do their own research and come to the conclusions that I have, not because I say so, but because there is actually research that backs up each of the conclusions that I'm leading them towards. Require an understanding of these different fields in order to sort of get at what it is that we actually do. See, most of us developed our skills without any formal training. And as a result, the systems that we use cross several fields of study. See, there's no one school of time management anywhere in the world. What there are different threads that we need to use in order to first understand what it is that we do, make a plan for improvement based on some targets that we create for ourselves, and set up a support structure so that we can accomplish the goals that we create over time. And the goals that, of course, that are created in the book that I encourage the readers to create have to do with the gradual upgrading or evolution of their time-based productivity system. So thanks for tuning into this week's episode of the Two Time Labs podcast. Take care and all the best to you. Bye now.